Good morning and welcome. It's Ask the Pastor on the Messenger of Good News, Worldwide, KFUO. KFUO is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thanks for being with us. You know, the weather endures. I tell you, this is great this time of year to be out cutting your grass and trimming on December 2nd in St. Louis. I don't know about you, Pastor Simon, but that's not typical for this part of the world.
No, it isn't. And since I lived in that part of the world for over three decades, I totally agree with you.
I was telling Pastor Spomer in the last, I actually got a little bit of a sunburn yesterday, if you can believe this.
Ah.
You know, and I always wanted to live in Florida, and here the good Lord has provided a bit of Florida for me here in St. Louis.
It will even out, Roland. I hate to tell you that.
Yeah, I know. Now you sound like Proverbs.
No, I'm not that smart. Or wise.
Pastor Hank Simon serves at Galilee Lutheran Church in Pasadena, Maryland. I've got a plateful for you today, but I would like to indulge just a moment of your time, Pastor, for a little private business before we get about Ask the Pastor. And, you know, listeners to both the Bible study and Ask the Pastor have probably heard Larry. Larry has called in several times and has a lot of interesting questions and insights. But he called me off air one day and was telling me about a good friend of ours. I don't know if you know Pastor David Boies Clare from here in the St. Louis area.
I know of him.
Yeah, he serves two small congregations in what I call the southern part of North St. Louis County. And Faith Lutheran Church, it was brought to my attention by Larry, was in great need, was languishing greatly, in need of some work for their church roof. And there are some other things that are going on there that puts this church in grievous need of some work. And I thought it would be an excellent Christmas project for both the Bible study and the Ask the Pastor programs to bring this up before our listeners and say, look, this is an opportunity where you can make a remarkable difference in a very, very needing part of the St. Louis metropolitan area. And if you would like to assist Pastor Boies Clare with the repairs to the roof there at Faith Lutheran Church, which is one of the legacy congregations here in St. Louis, it's got a long history in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, you can do so, and I would encourage you to do so as your heart and the Lord so direct you. If you'd like to contribute to the repair fund for Faith Lutheran Church, you can do so by sending a contribution, make it out to Faith Lutheran Church Roof Fund, send it to 3000 Lucas and Hunt here in St. Louis, Missouri, 63121. That's the church itself. And Pastor Boies Clare, we'll have him on sometime in the near future, talk a little bit more about what the needs are. But this is something we'll be talking about off and on between now and Christmas time. And we are a public service radio station as well. So if there are other things you want to bring to our attention, we invite you to do so. But this is one that really struck me because Pastor Boies Clare is a dear man when we call. He, much like you, Pastor Simon, he always shows up and is ready to go for whatever we challenge him with here on the programs. And I just throw that out there. And I thank you, Pastor Simon, for letting me take a moment to do that.
Hey, Roland, it's your show.
No, it's not. That's just an illusion. Hey, it is coming up on Christmas time, the Blessed Advent. I must greet you with the proper greeting for the season, Blessed Advent, my friend.
Thank you. We had some ringers from our handbell choir at the two services yesterday, ringing in the new year with their peal walking up and down the aisles.
With their what?
They peeled. They do a scale, and they do it as there were four of them, and they walked down the center aisle, and then one side aisle, and then the other. We did that at the start to ring in the new church year.
That's right. It is. Well, Happy New Year, too. I forgot all about that. I thought the new year started, well, why does the church year start earlier than the regular new year?
Because the church year revolves around the life of Christ, and there are really two central feasts, actually three if you want to go at it, and the first one is Christmas, Jesus' birth. And so through the centuries, the church has developed, at least in the West, the 4 weeks before Christmas, so that the fourth Sunday before Christmas becomes the first Sunday in Advent.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and KFUO at KFUO.org. Let me take a quick look at the email. No, nothing there yet. Perhaps we'll get an email here soon. But let me start you with some audio. I caught this yesterday morning on Fox and Friends.
You weren't in church?
I was in church.
Oh.
I get up very early.
Okay.
I go to church, and then I come back, watch some news. And you can find this online right now. It's in a number of places because a little bit different take here on the war on Christmas. There is a Catholic priest who is a regular on the Fox News program commenting on different things theological from a Roman Catholic point of view. His name is Father Jonathan Morris. I don't know if you've ever seen him on any of those programs or not. But the discussion turned to the war on Christmas. I guess loosely defined, that's when you talk about folks that want to sort of run the nativity scenes out of the public square, and Christmas trees are now seasonal trees and all that sort of nonsense. He had an interesting take on this. I want to play it for you and get your thoughts on it, Pastor Simon. Here we go.
Welcome back. Well, Jesus Christ is the reason for the Christmas season, but across the country, nativity displays being nixed and Christmas trees being called holiday trees instead.
I'm going to bet that Father John, our religion contributor, has some thoughts on this. Are you... Do you just gear
angry,
up for
am
war
I upset,
on Christmas?
Am I,
or, you know, what are you?
I'm not feeling angry from
no,
you now.
You know, and the reason I'm not angry is that, well, yes, I think it's silly. It's out of place for people to dedicate so much energy to try to get rid of Christmas scenes like this. The good news is, when Christianity has been persecuted, when it has been outlawed, when people have died for their faith, it hasn't gone away. And everybody has an opportunity to make sure that their faith does not go away in this Christmas season, and to live that faith as a family, as a community. What should we do about these, I think, very small percentage of people who are working to try to get rid of these public expressions of faith? Well, I think we should speak up. That's why I'm doing it. That's why I think it's important we have these stories to show what they're trying to do, but without losing the peace. If our Christmas is going to be all about getting upset at people who are trying to take away our Christmas, isn't that silly, too?
Well, what do you think of that, Pastor Simon?
Well, I think the good father is onto something there, because I think he's totally right. Just in the years that I've been a pastor, I've really seen the cultural shift from the assumption. And I can remember when I was growing up, there was a book that came out called, I think it was called Protestant Catholic Jew. If I remember right, the author was Will Hertzberg. And basically back then it was assumed that you were one of those three. And that in the past 50, 60 years has really shifted. The culture no longer assumes that you are Christian or maybe Jewish. It's much more shifted to a secular viewpoint. That's very much like the first century when the Christian church began. Where the society at best was apathetic and at worst was hostile. And that's the climate as far as sociology in which the early church really grew. So I think he's right. It's not that we go looking for persecution, but Christianity has enjoyed a favored nation status sort of thing, and that's got its downsides as well as its upsides. And you know, it is what it is, and we have the right to speak out, but that's not going to break or make the Christian church if somebody won't let us put up a nativity scene. What's much more important is our relationship with Jesus Christ and what we're doing to share that good news with others.
There's a few seconds more of the audio. Listen to this.
If I have to make a decision, do I say Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas? I am very happy to let people know I'm celebrating Christmas. That is America.
Yeah,
we don't have to hide our differences.
Why isn't it an affront to people? I mean, it's a celebration of your faith. It's a celebration of Christmas. Why would someone have to take offense to the way in which you introduce the holiday?
Right, I think it's a good question. I think it would be an offense if we were saying as a country, as the government, in our courts, the only public expression of religion should be Christianity because most Americans are Christian. That is not the American way. But the American way is not, let's pretend that we're all the same, and because we're so sensitive, we want to make sure that nobody has a public expression. There are people who would like faith and the freedom of religion to be instead the freedom of worship. That is, you can only have an expression of your faith, your religion, inside the walls of church. That has not been the American tradition, the American way, and we individually should step up and say, I'm going to live my faith in a joyful, happy way.
I think that was an interesting observation about the freedom of religion set against what he calls the freedom of worship.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think you know, without hearing everything that he said, the soundbite that you played, I would agree with that. This is, you know, people talk about whether this is a Christian nation or not, and we've got all kinds of different religions now, but the point is that as long as we have the freedom to express our faith, and I say Merry Christmas to people, I don't say Happy Holidays, because that is a way to witness to Jesus as being the reason for the season.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Don't forget the email works great, KFUO at KFUO.org. To the phones we go, Pastor Simon and John. Good morning. You're up first.
Good morning, Roland. Good morning, Pastor Simon.
Hello, John.
Wow, that's a pretty interesting news article. I can assure you, Roland and Pastor, that goes on around my house every year. I know exactly where that conversation comes from. I wanted to take just a moment, and I will be brief as I possibly can.
We've got 45 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, this is this is something that I wanted to share briefly. I had been tumultuously going through in my mind here lately how I was going to try to do a Bible study with my son and daughter. And that's been going through my mind, Roland, as you know well, for quite some time. Finally, I put the pieces together, and the Spirit finally told me how to go about doing this. And, you know, I went back to my catechisms and decided that the best way to get started on this, because I didn't really know where to start, was concerning, you know, I started off with Ephesians 6 through 9 and basically asked, you know, the kids, you know, let's read this, and then I did the let's talk about the third commandment, and I just kind of broke off from there. The exciting part about this is my wife literally became part of the conversation, to which in the beginning she decided she was never going to be, and I'll make this real brief. Basically, her first object that she did, Roland is and Pastor, is that she went and grabbed the New King James Version of the Bible. That was the best thing I think that could have happened. And my son, when he opened the pages, and I gave them a verse that I thought that we could study, and that was considering John 5:31 through 40. And one of the things that my son noticed immediately, and it could have hit me with a brick. My son said, "Hey, why are all these letters in red?" Couldn't believe it. When I told him that those were the actual words of Jesus, it was a Kodak moment. I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Well, John,
so here this season, you know, at this time of year, it's always, you know, kind of rough around here, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, John, Pastor Simon doesn't know the background, the listeners may, but why don't you share
why
this is so important for you.
Pastor, my wife and children and actually their entire family are they're Jehovah's Witnesses.
Ah, okay. Wow.
So, you know, this has been something that, you know, I noticed, you know, there's certain things, even in their Bible, you know, that the reason I say that is because that New World Translation that they use is actually a changed Bible to fit their theology.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even where it says, where, you know, before Abraham was, I am, their translation is, I have been.
Yeah, and the people who translated, quote-unquote, that Bible do not know Hebrew or Greek, if I remember right.
That is correct. Yes, that is correct. And, you know, so there's, it's always a, you know, it's a fine line that, you know, that we all walk, especially, you know, around here during the holidays, but Christmas time and things of that nature. But, you know, I decided that that fear that I had, you know, I believe that the Spirit is going to move us in the direction that He wants us to go in His time. And I trust in the Spirit. And, you know, I think this is the, you know, some of the wife and the family, you know, they're, you know, they don't like to discuss Christmas time too much or anything of that nature. I find this to be a perfect time to witness to the truth of Jesus Christ, and I just wanted to share that.
John, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
Well, how do you handle then, you know, with a family? If again, if I remember right, and it's been a long time since I looked at this, Jehovah's Witnesses do not celebrate Christmas. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So how do you handle that in your family?
We celebrate Christmas.
You do?
Yes. I don't, you know, out of respect, I mean, my wife is my wife. I love her dearly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether she thinks I'm misguided or I think she's misguided, you know, she is the apple of my eye, so to speak. I respect her ways of thinking. We have a small tree.
Okay.
I don't put the tree out early, which we used to, you know, at one time, years and years ago. We use a small tree. We still have small packages, you know, under the tree, but I don't do it, you know, with the Santa Clauses and many different things. You know, I just use either green paper or red paper, and we do it that way. And she's all very forthcoming to that. She doesn't seem to have a problem with that. She will actually go and pick up things at times for people, but she won't do it, you know, during Christmas, you know, Eve or anything of that nature. She will actually pick things up, but then I got to wrap it, you know. So, you know, we've managed as a family to work through it, but I still want the word of the true word of Jesus Christ to be taught to my children, and hopefully, prayerfully, at that time, the Spirit will move into my wife also.
Yeah, and you have that promise in Isaiah, my word will not return empty, but it will accomplish that which I please, and it will prosper for the purpose that I sent it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I believe that passage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I apologize, Roland, for the time taken here.
No, this is, John, this is what the church is about.
Yeah, you know, my conversion to Orthodox Lutheranism, and you know, allowing learning the law and the gospel, scripture interpreting scripture, has been the change in my life, and you know, I can't say enough. I just really can't. I can't actually be quiet about it. Once you get me started, it's hard to shut me up. So anyway. But blessings to you both. Roland, you know I love the show.
Thank you, my friend.
And we'll talk again soon. And Pastor Simon, have a great Christmas.
A blessed Christmas to you and yours also, John.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, John.
You
all
too.
The best. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. I wanted John to tell you himself, Pastor, what he had been struggling with, because he's been calling the program, I guess, wow, probably a couple of years now, sort of talking about this and how he's been working his way towards Orthodoxy, and it's a cool story.
Was John originally Jehovah's Witness also?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I don't believe so, yeah. But, you know, it's amazing. What you know, this may be an unfair question. I don't mean to make it an unfair question, but it strikes me that a lot of times that you find a zeal and a spirit in people who come to faith in the Lutheran Church that those of us who've been there for a lifetime don't seem to have.
Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly correct. And it's because they have an appreciation for it, which unless we are really, really broken or humbled or have something, you know, spiritually maybe even catastrophic happen in our lives, we just take it for granted because it's always been there. And so that's a good observation.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. You know, you've heard about the Mayan calendar doomsday business, haven't you?
Yes, I have, but I've tried to avoid it.
You've tried to avoid it. Well, you can't, because we're going to bring it up again now, only
okay.
Because in the Daily Mail of London, there's another story yet again about the doomsday cult that people have built around this Mayan apocalypse. However, there is good news in this. If you want to save yourself from this Mayan apocalypse coming on December 21st, the only place that's going to survive the Mayan apocalypse, according to this newspaper, this very serious newspaper account, is that there is a certain French mountain village by the name of Bergerac, with a population of 176, that for some reason these doomsday cults have marked as the only place in the world that's going to survive this Armageddon. Pack your bags. Let's go. And it says it's based on an interpretation of the Mayan calendar, which claims a planet is on a crash course with Earth and will impact on December 21st. Well, I don't know what planet that would be. But apparently this is the polar opposite of where the impact is going to be, and it's the only place it's going to survive.
Okay, okay. Because I was thinking they were going to say Mount Everest.
It's too cold up there. But, you know, I mean, look what the French have. They've got fine food, you've got wine, you've got cheese, you've got pastoral countrysides. Yeah, it's a lot better than Mount Everest, don't you think?
That's true. It's a lot closer, too.
Yeah, the only problem is, as they go through the story here, the villagers are completely oblivious. They have no idea that they're the only place that's going to survive. And they're darn cross about it, because there's apparently now a Mayan doomsday cult tourism industry that has sprung up for people who want to visit this little town on December 21st.
Are they going to build a Mayan temple there, too?
I have no idea what they're going to do, other than they're now marketing things. Some very clever residents of this little French town are marketing things like apocalypse pizza and end-of-the-world vintage wine. P.T. Barnum would be
proud.
Uh-huh. What do you make of that fascination? I mean, the world is going to end one day.
You know, I think it's part of people. We want to be in control of our future. And if you know when the world's going to end, that gives you a certain amount of feeling that, well, I can prepare for that. But as Christians, we're taught to yield that control to God and just depend on Him. And that's hard, especially when life can be as upsetting or full of fear or problems as it is for a lot of people these days.
You know, it goes on to quote in the story here, "We have seen military aircraft, lots of police and soldiers," one local said. "It's like a Spielberg movie. They're all looking for something. There's something going on this mountain." And yeah, the problem is security. It's crazy. Speaking of crazy stories also, this is out of New York. It's hard to avoid this story. It's been in the news everywhere. Did you see the photograph that's gone viral of the police officer in New York City giving a pair of boots to a homeless man?
No.
You haven't seen that story?
No. When did it go up?
Well, actually, it went up last weekend.
Okay.
And the officer did not know that he was being photographed, went out and bought this man a very expensive pair of boots because he was homeless and he was out on the street without any shoes. And that's not the end of the story. It says here from the New York Post, "The New York City homeless man whose gift of boots from a New York City police officer became an online sensation is now back on the streets with no shoes." All right. "The New York Times found him wandering barefoot Sunday night in Manhattan. The pimp identified him as Jeffrey Hillman, formerly of South Plainfield, New Jersey. Asked about this $100 pair of all-weather boots that the officer had provided to him. Hillman says he's hidden them because they're worth a lot of money. Says he's grateful for the gift, but he wants a piece of the pie because the photo was posted online without his permission."
Whoa.
Merry Christmas, Pastor.
Yes.
This poor guy shells out $100 for a pair of boots for this guy, and what does he say? "Well, that's nice, but now that it's gone viral, I want to be famous too and make a buck off this."
Well, the question is, has the police officer made any money off of this? And I'm guessing
no,
he hasn't.
He has not. If not. Matter of fact, he's, you know, from what little video I've seen of it, he seems very reluctant to speak about this publicly. Because, again, he just happened to be snapped by a passerby. He never wanted this picture taken. He's sort of kneeling in front of the man, giving him a pair of boots and giving him a pair of socks to go along with it. And someone just passing by snapped the picture, put it up, and it just took off on its own.
Yeah.
No good deed goes unpunished, Pastor.
Except by the Lord.
Well, that is true. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Coming up next, did you know that mobile phones are eroding our personal relationships? Well, I don't think that's any shock. And then, hey, look at this. Your kid, when he has a temper tantrum, there are now psychologists who say this is a mental disorder. We'll talk about all those things coming up when we return on Ask the Pastor. Stick around. Good morning and welcome back to Ask the Pastor on the Messenger of Good News, worldwide KFUO, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Pastor Hank Simon from Galilee Lutheran Church in Pasadena, Maryland, is our guest this morning. Now, I would assume, Pastor, that your cell phone is probably a very useful tool for you in your vocation.
Well, actually, Roland, I am somewhat of a, I wouldn't call myself a conscientious objector, but I'm somewhat old-fashioned, and I have a track phone, which I use basically when, say, I'm at the hospital and been delayed for getting back to church or getting home for supper, and I will call. I always let the secretary know where I'm going to be and when I'm expected, and if I'm delayed, I call in. So I basically function without a cell phone.
Really?
Yes.
You are the last of a dying generation.
Well, I have enough stuff coming in. I mean, I do a weekly email to a bunch of people in our congregation and in the community who worship with us. You know, I use email a lot, and we've got a website and but other folks are doing the Facebook here at church. I just am trying to keep my life as simple as possible while still being able to be contacted, you know, at any point. People have, yet, you know, in the evenings, people have my home phone number. If there's an emergency, I can be called. So it's not that I'm not unavailable. It's just that I prefer not to have a cell phone.
Well, I know that you, along with your wife, Mary Mann Simon, have really focused on kids and developing the children that we have in the faith that we are commended to pass along to them. But this news report says that mobile phones are eroding our personal relationships, especially when it comes to kids. It says young people's attachment to their mobile phones is eroding their relationships because they are compulsively checking their mobile phone constantly. It's almost an addiction, is what they call it in the story. They say that in this new study, a fellow by the name of Dr. James Roberts, who's at Baylor University, says that you know, students spend up to 7 hours a day interacting with communication technology, and he says they have to recognize that their behavior is becoming a problem. Mobile phones are a part of our consumer culture, he says. They're not just a consumer tool, but they're used as a status symbol, and they're also eroding these relationships because, well, it's now sort of a faux community that they join. What do you think about all that?
Well, I have a question. Does the article say anything about is most of that time spent texting?
109.5 texts a day is the average, the equivalent of around 3,200 texts a month. And you know, that's average.
I think that's, you know, phones are great, can be a great blessing. We had a couple of times when and I keep my track phone in the car. And so we had a couple of times when we had, you know, a road breakdown with our last car, and I would call, the AAA, and we get referred to the closest service provider, and they'd come and tow the car. And it was great to have one at that point. But then I started hearing stories about kids on church youth group activities where they were sitting like in a minivan, and somebody was sitting in the front seat and somebody was sitting in the next seat, and instead of turning around and talking, they were texting each other. And while that's convenient and I know it's got some benefits, interpersonal relations need to have face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball conversation. One of the things that I continue to work on when I'm talking with people is to look them in the eye. And you, with a text which is abbreviated, and even with an email which isn't, you can send off a message and then 5 seconds later regret it. I can remember growing up when they said, if you're going to write an angry letter, write it out, or at that point type it out, stick it in a drawer, and come back to it the next day to see if you've calmed down and if you really want to say what you said in that letter. With instantaneous communication, I think that some problems get escalated and increased, and you don't have, you've got the words, but you don't have the tone of voice or the body language or the look that the person has towards you. I think we are in for a generation or two where people will have trouble interpersonally relating when they're with somebody. Some people will, because of this. What's interesting is, I wonder how much this is an American phenomenon. Mary and I took a trip to Belgium back in October, and what we noticed is that there was very little texting going on. And I don't know how the Belgians can survive without walking around texting, but they weren't. And there was a lot more smoking than we're used to, but there was, and Mary made that comment, very little texting, very little use of cell phones out in public. So I'm wondering if this is more of an American phenomenon than something that's happening in other places like in Europe.
Yeah, it may be. Dr. Roberts here says that by way of the study and the research program that they were on with the college students at Baylor and other places, they found that the response that they most frequently get to what would happen if you didn't have a cell phone, if you didn't have a smartphone, that the majority of respondents said it would be disastrous to their social lives. They wouldn't know how to function if they actually had to talk to someone.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem, Pastor Simon. These are the people that you have to preach to on a Sunday morning if they bother to show up.
Yeah, and that's a challenge.
I mean, language is changing. How can you tweet the gospel?
Well, some people try.
Yeah.
And there was, I think it was Christian Century had an article a while back based on some, I don't know if it was a book or a research project, about expressing the gospel in 7 words. That might make an interesting show sometime. You might want to, you know, Google that.
The gospel in 7 words.
Yeah. How can you say, summarize the good news of Jesus Christ in 7 words? And there were all kinds of different responses to that. And it was sort of based on the idea that you have 140 characters for a tweet. So how do you use that? Or that's the other way, I guess you could go. You have 140 characters to sum up the Christian message. How do you do it in that amount of time? But that preaching has been a challenge for a long time, and part of that has to do with TV even before the access of email and then the personal phone and all that sort of thing, because Sesame Street developed the really short snatches of video and programming, and the ability of people in many areas to have a longer attention span has been challenged. Now, people can still do that, but I think it's a lot harder to do it than it used to be decades ago.
The last quote here from the story reads something. Here it goes. At first glance, one might have the tendency to dismiss such aberrant mobile use as merely youthful nonsense. I know a lot of people I've heard say that it's a passing fad. However, there's an emerging body of literature and research that's given increasing credence to cell phone addiction and similar behavioral addiction. We're all about addictions in our culture.
Well, I have to be careful sometimes if I'm not focusing on something I'm doing here at church, that I don't pop over to my church email account to see if anybody sent anything. That's not addiction, but I understand there are temptations. And addiction is something which basically at its root is probably a good thing in most cases. There are some exceptions, of course. But that becomes too important and in fact becomes like a little idol. And so there are all kinds of addictions that people have, and I think that's part of our human nature to have addictions. That doesn't justify them, that doesn't say we shouldn't struggle against them, but I think they are to be expected in some ways.
Let's go to the phones quickly. David, good morning. You're up next with Pastor Simon.
Thank you, Roland. It's a good thing I have this top-up phone, because it seems like if I wait too long to discuss what I want to say, I forget. Thank you for getting me on, but I used to be a custodian at a high school, and I used to have to work with freshmen and sophomores during the summer when they had to work for tuition, and I'd have to get them to do specific jobs in the classrooms. And before the job started, they'd all be texting at their table, and I mean constantly, and they didn't want to work because they never saw the money, but that's beside the point. But the thing is, even when they were working, they'd be pulling their phones out, and it's like, I wonder how some of these kids even graduate when nobody wants to read a book no more or sit down to read it. Everything's so fast-paced, and you got to have it now. And that's just my observation. I thought I'd share that with you.
All right, David, thank you.
Thank you.
Pastor?
Well, yeah, what I'm seeing, and I've seen it, I mentioned our trip, and some of the people you know, who we saw on the planes when we were traveling, had the electronic books, you know, the Kindle and the Nook and things like that. And they were reading, but they didn't have a book in hand. I'd rather have paper and you know, ink and bound together, because as Mary says, when she gets through with a book, often it gets passed on to somebody, her sister or my sister or somebody else, so that can be shared. And if there's something that I really like about a particular book, I can page back and find it, which is a lot easier for me, being, you know, somewhat technologically challenged, than to scroll back in an electronic book. I mean, I'm glad that people are still reading. It's just that it's a different kind of ball game now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm old school on that, because I've got an iPad. I use the Kindle app, and I have my Lutheran Study Bible is on that, and a number of other things, some of the commentaries that I use. Very convenient, made it much less expensive to buy those resources. It's remarkable that I can carry a library twice the size of what Luther had in his day in my back pocket, when it would have taken three or four ox carts to move his stuff around.
Right.
But, you know, the problem, well, maybe we're looking at this, bring me some clarity. I can hear someone saying in the ancient past, you know, Paul just sounded different when he was on a scroll.
Well, you know, it's technology. Whether it's a scroll, or whether it, you know, whether it's papyrus, or then it becomes vellum, or then it becomes a printed page of paper, or now it's on an electronic screen. It's technology. It's neither good nor bad. It just is. It's a neutral kind of thing. And I think of one woman in one of our Sunday morning Bible classes who has a vision problem, and so she's got, I'm guessing it's her smartphone, and she enlarges. She looks up the scripture passages there, and enlarges them, and then puts her eyes really close down so she can see them, and I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider you can buy the 600-pound large print Bible from CPH, it's a lot more convenient.
Yeah.
To get it on your smartphone.
It really is. Yeah.
And I'm not kidding. I've got that one behind me that, you know, they were kind enough to realize I need a little bit of help, so they put the large print one here in the studio. And boy, that's a heavy book.
Yep.
You know, if you get carry that and a couple of commentaries around, that's not really convenient. Hey, now, again, something else that you know about, it's an observation about what we're doing to our children, and maybe we should just let the scientists, what was it, Shakespeare who said, first we get rid of all the lawyers? I think I might be the one who would be more prone to say first we get rid of all the psychologists. Here's the latest thing. This is from the AP Wire copy from this morning. Could temper tantrums soon be considered mental illness? American psychiatrists to vote on these major changes. Did your kids ever have temper tantrums when they were small?
They got angry. As far as tantrums go, boy, that's been so long ago, I mercifully have forgotten if that's the case. Now, if you would ask Mary, she could probably tell you, but because she's the early childhood, you know, and the parenting expert, I'm just a pastor.
Yeah. Well, it says, for the first time in almost two decades, the nation's psychiatrists are changing the guidebook they use to diagnose mental disorders. Among the most controversial proposed change, dropping certain familiar terms like Asperger's disorder and dyslexia, and calling frequent severe temper tantrums a mental illness.
Wow. See, I don't know enough about psychology to give you a comment worth putting out over the airways and into cyberspace.
Well, I don't know they know that much more than you do.
I would hope so.
I mean, the point is, this is kind of silly, isn't it? Your kids come and kids go. They grow to maturity, and they still have temper tantrums even when they're older, just driving traffic someday.
Yeah. And it's when adults, you know, have temper tantrums, and that happens too. And so, you know, and then we the typical response is, well, grow up. But temper tantrum is when you allow your emotions to control you rather than you controlling your emotions. You're going to have those emotions, whether they're, you know, good or bad, is that's a whole nother topic. But you're going to have emotions, so the question is, how are you as a follower of Jesus Christ going to handle that?
They also want to get rid of the term gender identity disorder.
Well, okay.
That's not politically correct.
What are they going to call that?
Well, you know what? Let's see here. Gender dysphoria.
Oh, they're going to use a Greek-based word so that nobody knows what they mean.
<That's right. laughs> But you sound really smart that way. Yeah. Oh, gracious. You know, and gender dysphoria is going to be the new term that refers to people who are born with one gender and think they're the other.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, and that sort of thing. Because, well, you know, when you talk about gender identity disorder, when you call it, that's offensive. People don't like having disorders. It hurts their feelings.
Right.
Kind of like when you talk about sin, Pastor.
Sure.
It's a disorder I don't like to know that I have.
Well, but it's a spiritual genetic defect you can't get rid of.
I was born that way?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. Well, surely there must be at least 13 North Korean scientists working on fixing that as we speak.
Could be. We don't get much news out of there, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Hey, there's another controversy that's been roiling out there for a little bit. I talked about this last week. Pat Robertson, who I refer to as the gift that keeps on giving for radio people, made some comments about the age of the Earth and, you know, in the face of science, which is why I lead in with that story about science and how it thinks about things. And he said that, you know, in the face of science, you have to concede that Genesis may not, he didn't say it exactly this way, but in essence he said, you have to concede that the Genesis story is just that. It's a story. It's not an actual narrative of the creation of the world. And Ken Ham has weighed in. Ken Ham from the Creation Museum has weighed in on this. Has some interesting observations I wanted to throw your way.
Okay.
Let's see here. What Robertson said was, not only do we have to work hard to not let our kids be led astray, this is Ham who says this, not only do we have to work hard not to let our kids be led astray by anti-God teachings of the secularists, we now have to work hard not to let them be led astray by compromising church leaders like Pat Robertson. Is that kind of harsh? Or is that on? Spot on.
Well, Ken Ham, you know, really has some very strong and forceful views about how he views Genesis and the creation account.
Hmm. Pat Robertson, he says, gives more fodder to the secularists. We don't need enemies from without the church when we have such destructive teaching within the church. Ham added in the statement shared with those following his Christian Apologetics Ministry, the Facebook account is where he posted those remarks.
Well, Pat Robertson, I think, like you say, he's the gift that keeps on giving. He has said a number of very interesting things over the last number of decades, and he's coming out of his religious tradition. He is free to speak those kinds of things.
Yeah, I just, you know, what difference does it make how old the Earth is? That's the question that comes out of this. People may be asking, people of faith may be asking, if you young Earth, old Earth, well, let's just call the whole thing off.
Well, I think the bottom line is on this, and that's it's sort of like that, you know, what Father, I forget what his last name was, or maybe they didn't say it, but the Catholic priest that you talked about. What can happen when you get into these things about the age of the Earth is that you totally miss the whole point, which is that God is the creator of everything, including the Earth. I'm not saying that that's not important, but I think that the bedrock in the whole thing, to slip in a geologic allusion here, is that God is the creator, and that's what we have. That's what we need to emphasize. Sometimes we can get so wrapped up in how we are understanding scriptures that gets missed. It's like people who argue about the book of Jonah, and you know, and what kind of great sea creature, fish or a whale, swallowed Jonah. And the whole point of the book of Jonah is that God's mercy and grace are for everybody, including those who don't deserve it, like us. And that, you know, that gets totally missed too. So I understand why people are concerned about some things, but there was a phrase that was used years and years ago which says, don't major in the minors. And sometimes I think we're prone to do that.
Yeah, well, but this really, I mean, for some reason, this has really riled some people, this idea that Robertson would talk about the in the face of science. It's almost as if Robertson was indicating that he puts more faith in what the scientists say about the age of the Earth than Genesis.
Yeah, and I have a problem with that. I think the, you know, it's a one hand or the other hand, and the other hand is that scientists have, through the centuries, have come up with all kinds of different dates, and they keep on changing. And so if you focus on the fact that the point of the creation accounts is that God created, and it doesn't necessarily spell out how many years that took, or, you know, it says 6 days, and I believe there were six 24-hour days. But I, what I think that Pat Robertson is missing is that if God's word is reliable and true, and it is, then why would you want to go and you know, give that kind of credit to a theory of a scientist which 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years from now may change because new, quote, evidence, unquote, comes up?
Well, there's another story comes out of the Christian Post this morning. Talks about the scientific proof that prayer works.
Okay.
And this isn't the first time this has come up. There have been studies that have come out of places as diverse as Duke University Medical Centers, Reader's Digest, Ladies' Home Journal, have all covered stories about how prayer can be scientifically demonstrated, be effective. And they, you know, the studies always involve you take two subjects in a hospital suffering from something similar, and you have one person, you have a group of people, pray for one person, and then you watch and see which one gets better and which one doesn't. And generally they track it as being the person for whom the prayer is offered tends to get healthier faster or recover more robustly than the one for whom prayer was not offered.
Yeah, well, I think prayer is part of faith. And I guess my question is, you know, what if they're both? I know people who've been prayed for hard and long, prayer, you know, prayer chains, prayer ministries in different congregations, and the person still doesn't get better. In fact, may end up dying. I'm really cautious about trying to sign. And that's a, again, you're getting into science here.
Yeah.
Empirical evidence, trying to link the two. You know, prayer is not so much trying to change God's. What God's going to do in our lives, prayer is our trying to come in tune with God's will. And that's why I think it's really always important to understand that as saying, your will be done. We're not trying to manipulate God or force him to do something that we think is best. And I get a little antsy with you know, those kinds of studies, because it takes prayer out of the realm of faith and, again, tries to make it something that we can control. And you've got the danger of sliding into, well, you know, mechanically then, you know, if I say more prayers, is that going to help more? How long do the prayers have to be? How often do I pray them? All this kind of thing. I mean, you've got all kinds of slippery slopes if you're going to pray on the basis of a study like that.
Well, here, with about 2 minutes left, here's another story out of the news, current story about prayer. In addition to the one about all the scientific research, this comes out of Springfield, Massachusetts, reported by the Springfield Republican. In a blog post published on Saturday, city pastor Scott Lively thanked God for the massive explosion that leveled a Worthington Street strip club and called for further cleansing in the city. Now, that's proof of prayer, Pastor. When bars and strip clubs start exploding.
Yeah, but then again, you get into, well, why don't others explode? I mean, I just think you're opening a can of worms in a Pandora's box. You know, I pray for people that I know have needs. I do that every day. The list keeps on getting longer. I pray that I might yield, surrender myself to God's will each day. That's what I think we're saying in Thy Will Be Done in the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
And then I take what God gives, and I rely on that. There's a way that I sometimes end the prayer in church, which I say, you give us more than we desire or deserve. Provide us with what we need for the sake of your Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. And that's sort of the way I go at prayer.
Yeah, he goes on to say here that imprecatory prayers are Old Testament prayers.
True.
For the defeat and destruction of the enemies of God and his people, like Psalm 109. He said it's a cry for vengeance, and that's what he often cites when he prays for places like that establishment that blew up.
Well, you know, I agree that imprecatory prayers, the prayers asking for punishment, are in, especially in the Psalms. But the authors of the Psalms were divinely inspired. Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot. Yeah, exactly. You know, but I kind of feel for Ken Ham with this point here. You know, with friends like these in the church who needs enemies.
Yeah. I have some sympathy for him also.
Pastor Hank Simon serves at Galilee Lutheran Church in Pasadena, Maryland. And if you have kids and you know the name CPH, Concordia Publishing House, you probably found work from his wife. Merry Man Simon. Lots of good stuff from the Simon family. Thank you for your time, my friend.
You're welcome, Roland. God guide your day.
Thank you. God bless and blessed Advent to you.
And also to you and yours.
All right, guys, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great rest of the day. Bye-bye.
Listen to the Bible Study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Tuesday morning on His Time, we may not want a crisis to come, but crises do come, so it's good to be prepared. Dr. Richard Armstrong will tell us how congregations and members can prepare for a crisis. Also, Pastor Peter Kirby will discuss his new position as Regional Director for Europe with Lutheran Hour Ministries. That and much more on His Time Tuesday morning.
Weekday mornings beginning at 7 a.m. on KFUO.
The KFUO radio website is the place for you to enjoy your favorite programs at your convenience. Just go to kfuo.org. Once you're there, you can search for your favorite program by topic or guest. Also on the site, you'll find several podcasts available for your smartphones or MP3 players. Subscribe to your favorite podcast today at kfuo.org and then listen when you're ready, where you are. KFUO Radio, worldwide 24 hours a day, via radio, web, or smartphones.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church de Pere, Missouri is our Church of the Week on KFUO Clayton, St. Louis, worldwide at kfuo.org, the messenger of good news.